You're listening to Asheville FM at WSFM LP 103.3 Asheville. This is News Team correspondent Gary Leonard, and I am here today with David Forbes of the Asheville Blade. David, thank you so much for joining.
Always a pleasure.
And as we do, we are going to do our recap, what we call our city council report of the most recent city council meeting that took place on Tuesday.
And this one was May one for the record 14th. Books. Yeah, it really was.
Certainly one for the record books, and one that was kind of delayed, and there was a lot of kind of build up in terms of the contentious nature of what was going on. And it certainly lived up to its contentious billing.
Yeah, mainly to foreshadowing for your listeners.
We love foreshadowing.
Like mainly about the fight over the Flatiron Hotel, and especially that tying into larger issues around gentrification and the metastasizing, frankly, of the hotel industry
and
in Asheville.
I mean, like, some of the interpersonal aspects of what takes place within the chamber, both among council and the varying levels of who is prioritized when it comes to certain things. And we're going to dive into all that.
And I
think a good place to start is something that we as a community, Asheville, are grappling with in terms of our workers and workers' rights. And, you know, what does it mean to pay a living wage? And that very thing came up, David, in terms of Deborah Campbell talking about the presentation of the overall budget. And I think there's some context needed because we've spoken at length in terms of the argument against compression and the idea of flat raises for everyone. And really quickly, can you bring folks up to speed and then kind of the contentious conversation?
So every year the city goes over its annual budgets, possibly the single most important vote they take in a given year. And the budget this year is a little over $190 million. And there are other really controversial things in this budget. Transit was supposed to get a significant bump this year. The city's own plans say they really have to put like $2.4 million to keep the transit system viable and start making it even remotely more equitable. Instead, this budget has significantly less for that. It puts another $600,000 into the Asheville Police Department. Very controversial. They've gotten massive increases in recent years, despite having major problems with racial disparities and misconduct cases and a lot of other issues. And yet again, like, one of the biggest drivers of the budget increase and one reason, you know, senior city staff are claiming they don't have like much leeway in the budget, even though the city's doing incredibly well revenue wise, is that they give flat across the board increases. Now, this seems like pretty, you know, straightforward. Everyone gets the same percentage increase. But really, this method is very tilted towards the already pretty well off. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you know, Deborah Campbell, city manager, makes $220,000 a year. And 2.5% of that is a lot more than 2.5% for, you know, a starting firefighter or a city employee making, you know, $30,000 a year or the city minimum rate, which is $13 an hour.
Right.
So there's been an – it was broached last year that there was you know, mentioned that, hey, maybe the city could do a tiered thing where, you know, the people at the top either didn't get, you know, any increase, they're already making a lot of money, or maybe a small adjustment, and, you know, more people maybe who are kind of struggling to make ends meet in the city would get a much larger increase. And that was shot down last year. And this argument against it from some of the more centrist – I have to say, frankly, some of the wealthier council members – was that, you know, this would cause quote-unquote wage compression. And generally, this is – I have to admit, this is just a blatant defense of inequality. The city, and as this we'll get into in a sec, has – especially even compared to the county, which has its own issues, has a drastically unequal wage scale at the city, salary scale. I've seen this in department after department. The people, you know, in the upper, middle, and the top make a lot of money, and a lot of the rank and file don't make very much money at all. And that really kind of came to the fore, and the argument that, you know, used against changing that is that it would cause compression and hurt morale. Like, somehow someone making $60,000-$70,000 a year would get resentful over, you know, say, a firefighter now making, you know, $35,000-$40,000 a year. Like, honestly, I have to say personally, I wouldn't want that person in city government anyway if they have that cruel, frankly, of an attitude towards, you know, their fellow workers and their fellow Ashevillians being able to make ends meet.
Yeah.
That's a sadistic and horrific way to look at the world. So this kind of came to the fore again, because the new county manager has announced that, you know, she supports a move to $15 an hour for all county employees. And while the living wage in Asheville is technically $13, and it was a big fight a few years ago, which, following a Blade investigation that showed that there were many city employees who still weren't even paid a living wage at that point.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The city qualified anyone working 20 hours or under as temporary or seasonal, even though some of them have been working in their jobs since like the 70s.
Sneaky.
Yeah. And, so, you know, these workers are paid much closer to the minimum than the living wage in many cases. Big controversy when we published that. A lot of advocates pressed against that situation, and the city did change that. They did raise everyone up to a living wage. But that only happened under a lot of public pressure, and there were the same arguments used against that by the previous city manager's administration back then. So this is a long-running issue. So with the county doing it, the question then turned, well, is the city going to do this? It, you know, $13 may be a living wage, but even the advocates of the living wage, the nonprofit that compiles Just Economics, says, look, this is a more just minimum. This is like the bare-bones starting point. Where you might have a chance of making ends meet. Yeah. And a lot of labor advocates, a lot of workers have been pressing for 15 an hour is like where the new minimum wage should be.
Yeah.
That's been getting a lot of momentum in recent years.
Should be.
Yeah, exactly. And so with the county doing it, should the city do it? Councilmember Keith Young, if the budget was kind of presented, and the budget notably dodged a lot of the most controversial stuff again. This year, it didn't really get into how they were kind of underfunding transit.
Police budget.
Yeah. There were very few specific figures mentioned other than the overall total. And honestly, it's interesting because the city's kind of tell they want to take a more transparent approach, but they're still shutting the public out. They're still not giving a full explanation of the most controversial aspects of this budget. Really, again, I think we're seeing an administration, sadly, under the new city manager that so far views the public more as an impediment than actually people to talk to and have real input in this process.
Yeah.
But in this case, Councilor Keith Young said, look, like we need to raise everyone to $15 an hour. And it emerged in this that for the county, it's only like 12, 13 employees that don't make $15 an hour. For the city, it's 143.
Wow.
And so I think this definitely speaks. Again, the county has its issues, but in comparing over the years some city and county departments, generally their pay scale is a little less unequal than the city's. Whereas the city, you see departments where, you know, rank and file make very little, the people at the top make quite a bit. And that definitely was kind of driven home in this. So Young pressed for this, and Campbell said, oh, I'm Deborah Campbell, the city manager, said, I'm personally inclined to this. You know, I'd really like to do it, but we have to look at the budget in a, quote, more holistic way. Warned about wage compression, which is, again, the blatant defense of
inequality. What does that mean, a holistic approach to looking at a budget?
So what she says is that she wants to wait on any increase until next year when the city would do another compensation study at the cost of several hundred thousand dollars, probably, to say, you know, oh, do we need to adjust this, adjust that? The previous compensation studies, generally, ironically, the last time the city was doing a compensation study was when the living wage issue came up in 2015. And at that point, the people doing the compensation study were against a living wage increase. For all this kind of BS, you know, it will cause wage compression, hurt morale. And Young pushed back. He kept pushing. You know, it'd be about $500K a year for the city to do this. And the city's budget, again, is $190 million.
I think it's safe to say it's doable.
Yeah, it's very
if you really want to, and I have to just jump in. Like,
yeah, please.
The idea of doing a holistic approach and like having outside, consultation to look at wages, all that's great. But at the end of the day, there are folks that are making less than what is needed to like put food on the table and make it work. And like this acceptable nature and culture that you have that like, cool, we'll do this. I'm making a really fat figure here. I don't have to think about this. We're going to go ahead and put this in this like this frame of bureaucracy and like, you know, this is the process, et cetera.
When you make over $200K a year, you can afford to talk about being patient and holistic.
Right, yeah. Right. So coming back to Keith and kind of him like pushing back.
Yeah, so he pushed on it. And this is really interesting. And I've noticed this dynamic a lot in council, and I have to note it. Mayor Manheimer cut him off, like, in a way that I don't see here cut off other council members. And it's notable that Young is one of two African-American members on council. She does not treat other council members this way. There's a real issue here. And especially any time he pushes back against, you know, senior staff's recommendation or pushes for more wages or in previous cases it happened when he's questioned the way that police reform is being done or not being done. Mm-hmm. And, you know, accused him of grandstanding, said she was sick of it. Really, frankly, pretty petulant. You know, like, agree with, you know, every bit of approach that Young was taking to this or not. Like, he's bringing up an issue that clearly a lot of the public feels the same concern, and a lot of his colleagues feel a similar concern as would emerge in the course of the debate. And council members have every right to question their city manager, even dismiss the city manager, even criticize the city manager. And there's nothing sacrosanct about a budget. A city staff can present it, and then council, who have the final say, can go, no, we want this change, we want this change, we want this change. But then Councilmember Vijay Kapoor accused Young of, you know, trying to micromanage, that you shouldn't really question the city manager on this, which is just a bluntly anti-small-D democratic argument. And really, I think, shows kind of a contempt for the public and for even one's own office, that this is your job, is to question city officials.
Right. That's what you were elected for.
Yeah, exactly. and to hold them to account and to do something different if you feel that it's justified, and feel that it's going to merit the public. Yet again, brought up the wage compression thing. And, you know, Kapoor is a very well-off consultant. Manheimer is a real estate attorney for our land law attorney for one of the most powerful, wealthiest law firms in the city. So these are not people who are hurting at all. And Young kept pushing back. He said, look, like, you want something that hurts morale, think about the person making $13 an hour looking at the person who makes $150,000. That hurts morale. And he wasn't the only one of this. Like, council member Shanika Smith weighed in saying, look, you know, there's a lot to consider about pay and budget. Mm-hmm. But if we have people not making – who work for the city, not make enough to live in the city, that's beyond morale. It's a moral issue.
Totally.
Councilor Brian Haynes also weighed in. There was a lot of, frankly, petulance from the other members of council, especially Manheimer and Kapoor, about, you know, not even wanting to bring this issue up, not even thinking it was appropriate for them to question this.
I have to ask, and I've been on a big kick around accountability, specifically those who are in positions of power. So as you have seen and you've noted here on these city council reports of kind of the pattern of – the mayor undermining and using a tone specific to council member Young. Has there ever been an accountability piece of any other council member kind of intervening or stepping in?
No, there hasn't. And that's almost something only they can do, you know, at the end of the day. Though it was interesting, the reaction from the audience to Manheimer's remarks was people were not happy. There was audible, like, you know, kind of dismay at Manheimer's remarks. There was applause at Young and Smith's remarks about, you know, the need for this. But yeah, it's, you know, it's pretty ugly to have these much more well-off council members dismissing the need for who make, you know, a lot more money than the vast majority of people working in the city.
Yeah.
Dismissing concerns being brought, including by, you know, Asheville's two black council members saying, look, we really need to do this.
Yeah.
So I can't but help note that dynamic, you know, and it's a pretty ugly one.
Yeah.
So, the budget hearing is going to happen May 28th. The public will then have a chance to weigh in on this, on transit, on policing, on all these issues.
For the listeners out there, May 28th is going to be the public hearing for the budget.
It's 5 p.m. I encourage people to show up and, you know, make their opinion on this one way or the other. No.
Yeah. Cool. Well, David, let's go ahead and transition over to what has been an interesting journey.
The main event.
To discuss the Flatiron Building and the developers who are seeking to turn that Flatiron Building into a hotel, thus putting out a lot of different small businesses and organizations who currently are using that space right now. And it has really, in many ways, kind of been a microcosm to where we are in Asheville and talking about the hoteliers and who gets access in and who gets a vote yes. And so I don't think we need to spend too much time on the context, because I think listeners are kind of in the know in terms of where we're at.
It'd be good for a bit of a briefing, though.
But what's going on and what happened?
So the owner of the Flatiron Building, Russell Thomas, is teaming up with this Charleston-based, though he has some roots in the area, hotelier, Philip Wolcott. And they're claiming the only way that this historic building can possibly be preserved is turned into a luxury hotel, and in the process kicking out around 70 businesses and organizations that are in what is some of the last, like, affordable non-gentry organizational and business space left in the core of downtown. Obviously, this proposal's gotten a lot of outcry, with a mass amount of opposition. Everyone from the fairly well-off neighbors nearby and some of the condos saying, they don't want this, to working class Ashevillians overwhelmingly, a petition against doing this got over 1,000 signatures. Thomas was saying, oh, this is the, you know, I'm doing this altruistically. It's the only way to preserve this old building. He's also getting $16 million for this. I think take that with, possibly a shaker or salt mine full of salt at this point.
So what's going on with the offers? Like, in terms of, was this the only offer? Are there just, like, other offers? Are they shutting them out?
So that was interesting because, he claimed it was, the only offer, or his representatives did. But then, one of the people who spoke said that in an earlier meeting with Thomas, kind of one of the early meetings before this got formally proposed, he said that, he had gotten other offers, but he wasn't entertaining them because he had a deal signed with this hotelier. So it'd be across from two other luxury hotels if it had passed, and it would have broken the city's guidelines on multiple fronts. Generally, the city requires, that a hotelier provide parking. Mm-hmm. This would actually have taken the parking from outside lots, including, public decks. So it's And, you know, the city requires they have a loading zone and a, you know, customer guest drop-off zone. This is only going to have a loading zone on Wall Street, taking some space out of the sidewalk for that. Like, it really, I think, seemed to – we did a piece on the hotel wars, which this is definitely a part of and kind of a key battle. And I think it's a key battle – is a key battle because it kind of shows – this breaks even the city's own guidelines on multiple fronts. And basically, if council had signed off on this, they would have signed off on anything. And I think a lot of hoteliers would have taken notice. So opposition had kind of built on this. It very narrowly passed the city's planning commission. And then it was supposed to go in late April to council and then was delayed literally like less than an hour before the hearing was supposed to start. But, you know, people packed out the chamber.
And there was a pretty overwhelming response of folks who who felt some ways about this.
Yeah. You know, there were some people who showed up for overwhelmingly they were other, you know, developers and fairly large business owners, people directly tied to it or had worked for Thomas at some point. And heads of, you know, some like kind of larger downtown organizations. That was generally, and there were a few exceptions, but that in general. And it was interesting, as the night went on, the rhetoric got more heated, including from that side. You know, they started accusing the people against the hotel being passed as, you know, not respecting capitalism, which, hey, personally guilty as charged. You know, capitalism is a terrible system, and it treats a lot of people awfully, that, you know, somehow Thomas had a right to sell this, and, you know, it was but, yeah, on the other hand, like the – but the critics kind of won the day on this one. Mannheimer, who is mayor, kind of runs – you know, meetings in general, has, you know, had people coming up, okay, are you against, are you for, kind of trying to go back and forth. And, you know, in kind of right before council took a break and then came back, the public hearing, the pro hotel side kind of ran out of people. Though a few did, you know, eventually come in, and you have people in overflow rooms. But yeah, the critics really hammered this, and that included, you know, like some of the city's own board members. Andrew Fletcher's member of the Downtown Commission, a busker advocate, had a long speech that people had given him up their time. It was like, look, like, what did you take back the authority over hotels for? Because most of them didn't used to go to council, now all of them do, if you aren't going to use it. You know, there's a terrible project. He said, look, we'll remember this the next time an election happens. And then, like, one of the pro-hotelier advocates came up and was incensed that he'd made this argument and said it was, you know, threatening to mention that, hey, people will not vote for officials who pass things they hate. So really, you did see, like, a lot of classism, a lot of very elitist contempt for kind of a lot of the people of Asheville. And this wasn't new. The end of the planning and zoning hearing, Thomas spoke very derogatorily about the tenants. And, you know, they were just looking to get by month to month, didn't really invest much. These are people who've made his, you know, his living and his profits possible for many, many years. And so really people kind of pushed back. They said, look, you know, historic preservation, if it's not going to, you know, no locals are really going to use this place, isn't really a good, you know, we need a city that's got a lot of different kind of uses and it doesn't all need to be hotels.
Yeah.
And all these people are going to get kicked out for it, because of it. So yeah, it was really interesting back and forth. And it, you know, Sarah Benoit, who's a longtime local and has been speaking more on these issues recently, spoke up and said – I kind of crystallized, I think, some opinions in the room when she said, look, like council keeps telling us that you can't do this and you can't do that. You know, you can't fight gerrymandering. The state's trying to put in local elections. You can't pass a $15 minimum wage. Like, what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do something. We're, you know, we're tired of waiting, basically. And, you know, you tell us you can't oppose hotels. Like, start doing something. You know, people want you to fight.
Yeah.
And it seemed like that pressure really resonated in the end. Like, and so, interestingly, it wasn't turned down an outright vote. And even that, I think, was kind
of... Isn't that bizarre, though, David?
It is bizarre.
Because isn't there an issue if it went to an outright vote, the opportunity for them to come back with the resubmission?
Yes.
Because they just pulled it. But that's kind of unprecedented in and of itself.
Yes. So it's not unprecedented. It's happened before. But it is being given... It's definitely a privilege given to developers.
Totally.
And as a matter of fact, Wyatt Stevens, who is an attorney representing the hotel group in this... even spoke at the end of public comment after already extensively speaking during the developer's presentation, which council didn't have to allow. They could have said, no, look, you had abundant time to make your case. But they allowed him to do that. And he, you know, reiterated that, you know, actually did also threw in some stuff. You know, we live under a capitalist system. Like, I don't know what that justifies. You know, but like,
we live under a capitalist system, David, that everything is open in the free market. Those who thrive will thrive.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's interesting to see, like, some of this reveal exactly how, like, right wing, even totally. Far right. Like, some of these ostensibly progressive, you know.
100%.
And it was interesting, too, like, Stevens, who's, you know, part of a very very wealthy law firm, mentioned, oh, you know, well, businesses having to move just happens sometimes. My law firm had to move. We were able to find a new space very quickly. And, like, most people aren't wealthy lawyers. Like,
man,
you know, there was such, like, a gap
here. Dripping and privilege.
Yeah,
and
exactly. Like,
entitlement.
There's such a lack of understanding about what most Asheville go through how they live here.
Right.
And it would extend to some on council, too, sadly, as we're about to talk about a little bit in a second. So Stevens even asked, hey, we'd like to ask that, you know, you each go around and announce your opinions so we know what the vote total is so we can withdraw it. And council have to do this. As a matter of fact, a council member, after people expressed their opinions on council, could have said, we're not allowing you to withdraw it. We're making a motion.
Yeah.
You know, we're calling the question. There's going to be an up or down vote. This does allow the developer to bring it back at some point, whereas if they'd lost, they wouldn't be able to bring it back for a year. They would have had to bring back something entirely different. At the same time, it was clear that council was pretty adamantly against this. So far, at least the majority are. Councilor Julie Mayfield, who has generally voted for hotels in the past, said that, you know, the displacement of businesses, said that she didn't buy that, you know, this is the only use. There are other Flatiron buildings in the around the world that, you know, almost all of them aren't hotels. They're, they're commercial spaces, they're community spaces. There are other alternatives available. And she actually said, you know, heaven help us if the only alternative for a historic building is a hotel, because that's clearly not the case. So definitely that kind of helps solidify this kind of coalition against. Council member Shanika Smith said she wasn't okay with displacing businesses and kind of, you know, this hotelification of downtown that's going on. Councilor Brian Haynes, who's consistently been against hotels, just said straight up didn't buy what the developer was saying here. There are clearly other alternatives. It raised the question that a lot of other people would raise, too, which is, hey, you say this building hasn't been updated since the 20s. You've owned it for 33 years. Where's the maintenance money been going? Like, this is your job, to partly as a landlord, to maintain it. Mm-hmm. What have you been doing? So that was that point seemed to carry a lot of sway. In the end, Councilor Keith Young was also against it. So you had kind of this 4-3. Vice Mayor Gwen Whistler, and who's voted against some hotels recently, mm-hmm. but also voted for some in the past.
Yep.
And Mayor Esther Mannheimer didn't really say their opinions. I think the one who did most was Kapoor. He really went on this, you know, rant in favor of this hotel that is necessary for historic preservation. And he also went a step further and said that he thought it was, quote, dehumanizing to criticize hoteliers. And this was honestly, like, I have to say that the rationale used was, A, blatant classism and, frankly, foul. He said that, you know, calling the hotel industry a machine was dehumanizing. You know, and in his remarks, interestingly, I think there was a rhetorical tactic where he kind of conflated the industry, like the hotel magnates who have been getting the criticism and doing these big expansions. And these are very wealthy people, with smaller, you know, people running a smaller lodging facility or something like that, or a smaller motel or hotel, and then hotel workers.
Mm-hmm.
So The Asheville Blade has published a number of pieces, one of which he alluded to, one called The Tourism Machine by Matilda Bliss. It's on the way that hotel tax dollars are used overwhelmingly by an industry dominated by wealthy white corporate interest to bring very swiftly white wealthy people here. Like, that's not exaggeration. That's exactly how they lay their own mission out. Kapoor even said that it was, you know, prejudice against the South Asian population to criticize hoteliers, which is just overwhelmingly the hoteliers who've been criticized are very wealthy and very white.
Did he expand on that point?
He associated that again, it was kind of this conflation that was going on, saying that because there are, you know, South Asian business owners that are involved in the hotel industry here, criticizing the industry as a whole it doesn't hold up.
Mm.
Overwhelmingly, and people can go ahead and read the Tourism Machine piece,
mm-hmm.
That's on our site now. They can read the Hotel Wars piece. They can look at the Blade's previous coverage. Overwhelmingly, the people profiting from this hotel explosion, the people being criticized for it, John McKibben, Philip Wolcott, and Russell Thomas, the Cecils, you know, who are literally had been English nobility before they married into the Vanderbilt.
I was just going to say, all these sound like really kind of like noble royal last names.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, overwhelmingly the top tiers of the hotel industry, and the hotel industry really, like who runs it, mm-hmm. Are incredibly wealthy and are overwhelmingly white. And that has been where the criticism has been directed, overwhelmingly. And one of the hoteliers targeted in Matilda's piece, for example, is a very wealthy South Asian mm-hmm. hotelier as well, and who also can reinforce classism and participate in gentrification. Like,
totally.
So it was interesting that, you know, it's kind of a, like, don't criticize the rich people, which I think is just an absurd rationale. And anyone who doesn't feel like tourism is a machine should talk to the people who are actually being displaced and having their lives, you know, pushed out of their own city by it. And then while Mannheimer didn't announce her opinion on this directly after the developer withdrawn this proposal, she did say that she felt it was, quote, a slap in the face that the kind of it was this rationale that developers built this town, which is something that a lot of the pro hotelier crowd had said. And which is honestly not true. No, the people of Asheville built this town, continue to build this town, often been treated terribly. So it's this interesting image that, you know, this developer just walks in, like, waves their hand, and these buildings spring up seemingly from nowhere. you know, or these business owners walk in and wave their hand, and money springs up seemingly from nowhere. But, you know, that it was kind of a slap in the face. That was her word, that, you know, they weren't allowed to then turn around and make as much money as possible off these buildings because they'd renovated them back in the day. And honestly, like, this is really where I have to push back. You know, like, if you want to talk about what's dehumanizing this town, eviction notices are dehumanizing.
Yeah.
Hunger is dehumanizing. Seeing, you know, seeing a sitting council member use anti-black racist stereotypes from the 1990s drug war against the NAACP pushing police reforms, which Kapoor has done, that's dehumanizing.
Yeah.
You know, seeing the mayor of Asheville, you're talking about slap in the face. See the mayor of Asheville up there saying that people struggling to make ends meet in this town, the city whose wages the city controls, mm-hmm. don't deserve to make $15 an hour.
Disenfranchisement.
Yeah.
Displacement.
Exactly.
The brutalization of black and brown bodies.
Exactly. You want to talk about dehumanization? ICE raids are dehumanizing.
Right.
And the city's Mayor Mannheimer said that, oh, hey, we should talk with ICE. There are some good people in it. That's dehumanization. That's a slap in the face. And frankly, I'm sick of the rest of us being lectured that overwhelmingly white people with money are the ones who built this town. They didn't build a damn thing.
Yeah.
The rest of us did. The rest of us do. And overwhelmingly, the communities that have built the culture here, built the fabric of any redeemable thing about this city, are the ones being targeted, harassed, and pushed out.
Yeah.
And they have every right to be angry at the institutions and, frankly, the tourism machine and the gentrification machine that are pushing this forward and making their lives worse. And they have every right to be angry at the people profiting off it.
Right.
It is that simple.
Yep. I agree. Yeah.
So, yeah. And it's just – it's, you know, as someone who's struggled with poverty most of their life, who faces, as a trans woman, a lot of bigotry in this town, including from tourists,
mm-hmm.
Especially from wealthy tourists who are bigoted as all get out, the same people that the TDA is – trying to attract here cause mm-hmm. problems for a lot of the rest of us because they're really entitled and a lot of them are blatantly bigoted and they come here and get drunk.
Yeah, no,
so,
I appreciate you, David, for many of reasons. And I think, you know, while this is a city council report, again, this is a recap of a city council meeting that represents each and every one of us.
Yeah.
Like the folks who are working 9 to 5, that are working late hours to make ends meet, to live in the city because you want to be a part of that fabric that you alluded to in the culture. And, you know, we have decision makers who we are allowed to criticize, that we are allowed to hold accountable, as we should. I mean, for these council members and the mayor, these were folks that were elected by us. And, you know, and for the general population that exists here, we don't represent the gentry. We don't represent folks that, you know, have tons of money that are able to, you know, look within or not – you're not able to look beyond the privilege and entitlement that comes with that. And so we as the community, we as the folks that are, you know, speaking out against these things – again, I just want to reiterate that we're talking about the city council meeting, but it's within our right to criticize every aspect of what's happening to the city.
Yes.
Because for many of us
– absolutely is.
We don't like the direction that it's going.
No. And the direction – it's not just – you know, it's – you're completely right. The direction it's going is – unjust, it is unacceptable, and it is a direct threat to many of our lives and mm-hmm. communities.
Yeah, and again, I think the hard thing for me, and I know that this is kind of turning into a bit of a conversational piece with you and I, is that there just continues to be this theme when it comes to the elected officials, local elected officials, yeah. when you have HB2, it's like, we can't do anything about it. When yep. you have redistricting, we can't do anything about it. When you have, you know, Johnny Rush being brutalized, oh, that was a mistake. You know, there was only so much we could have done beforehand. Yeah. There just continues to be this level of, in my opinion, just excuse making.
Yeah,
when moments like this come up where you can't actually take a stand for what is like a morality thing, you know, yeah. when you're talking about morale of a living wage
yes.
or who's being pushed out when a new hotel's coming up, this is not a matter of the free market and capitalism. This is a matter of like...
Or it is, but it's a matter of how detrimental those things are.
Right,
yeah.
right. And so I think that's the frustration that yeah. that obviously you saw in the chamber on Tuesday night. But just like, you know, folks feel really beaten down and yeah. unheard, and they should. And I hope
their
that
anger is totally justified.
100%. And you know, when other things will come up, you know, there's a budget meeting coming up as well. And, you know, these are things that, you know, council members need to hear.
Well, and honestly, I think the question has to be asked, if they're so powerless, why should we keep them in office?
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, David, this has been good, and I know that we'll probably continue
Indeed, yeah.
talking through this off air. But, you know, a lot of these issues, they're very contextualized.
Yes.
There's a lot of layers to it. Where can listeners go to read stories such as Hotel Wars and some of your other pieces?
AshevilleBlade.com.
All right, David. Well, thank you so much for joining us here at Asheville FM for the City Council Report.